Friends, Christ is risen.
He is risen indeed.
And thanks be to God. I am just so happy that it's Easter. I feel like saying finally. It just feels like Lent, the month of March especially, has just felt, at least to me, I don't know about y'all, just like heavy and busy and hard. And, you know, I've been, as preacher here, all of our texts have been these last really difficult weeks of Jesus, and so that has felt hard, and the world has been heavy, like all of it. It's like, oh, it's Easter, like this is such, it's a good day to celebrate, to be with dear ones, to have Easter egg hunts, to eat a wonderful breakfast together, to just be with each other. All of it is so good, and it's complicated. Easter is complicated. Easter's just, and life is complicated. Because there's still like none of that stuff, none of the heaviness of the world has gone away. Some of us are still very tender with grief and loss. We're still feeling those things. It's still within us. We're still experiencing pain in our bodies or loved ones who are ill or grieving. We're witnessing the injustice that's going on around us. And that's just what life is. Easter is a celebration, and we're still holding many hard things. We're not singing this hymn this morning, but I'm sure many of you know the hymn, Thine is the Glory. Thine is the glory. And then in our new hymnal, I really like it. It's resurrected one instead of...
Risen, conquering son.
Conquering son. Yes, I was going to say, I like the switch to resurrected one versus domination.
And we will be singing it this morning.
Oh, are we singing it?
Yes,
I didn't think
it's
we
our
were
closing
this
hymn.
Okay, that's the closing hymn, everybody. Single verse. In the second stanza, the stanza goes, Jesus meets us, risen from the tomb. Lovingly he greets us, scattering fear and gloom. Let our doubting spirits find a voice to sing. Christ who died is living. Death has lost its sting. But you know, death hasn't lost its sting. It does still sting. Fear and gloom may have scattered, but they haven't gone too far away. Our struggles are still with us. And, you know, our mental health is still suffering. Our physical health is sometimes still suffering. But right from its first, very first moments, Easter was this way. It was complicated. In the morning when Mary first approached the tomb, it was dark. It was morning, and she came because she was sad and she was traumatized. It's the first day after Passover, and we don't think about this very often, but what happened was Jesus was crucified in this very traumatic way, and those women and his friends who were there with him, immediately they had to go and celebrate Passover, this festival of freedom and liberation, when they had just had a beloved one really like taken from them in a really cruel way. So they haven't had a chance to really feel that and grieve that. Or for them, that Passover was very complicated. Mary's had to put those feelings kind of on hold for a minute. And here she is. She's coming in these dark moments of mourning. And she's mourning. It's the first time she's really being able to feel that depth of her loss. And she's there in the dark, waiting for the sun to rise, to find her beloved teacher. And he's gone. So imagine the confusion that she must have been feeling right there, that disorientation, that imbalance of like being ready to like fully feel this thing. And then once again, being just like knocked off kilter. So she runs to tell her friends, Peter and what John calls the beloved disciple, and they get into this kind of like foot race, like who's going to get there first? And then one goes in, and then the other goes in, and then the other goes a little farther, and they find the empty tomb, and they've already had all of them actually have had the experience of resurrection, because they've just, not even too many verses ago, many chapters ago, experienced Lazarus being resurrected. In fact, some biblical scholars believe that the beloved disciple is Lazarus because he's been described in the scriptures as being the one that Jesus loved. He's Jesus' beloved friend. So some people think that the beloved disciple, even now, is Lazarus, who's had a physical experience of being resurrected. And so they go in and they see the empty tomb and they know that Jesus brings the power of new life. And so the story tells us they believe. They believe. It's not entirely sure what they believe. Like, they believe in the resurrection. Maybe, probably. They believe what Mary was, that Mary was telling them the truth. Seems like it. Yes. In any case, now they believe. Time to go home. But Mary stays. Mary stays in that place where she's had that experience because she still needs to feel the thing. She still needs to understand, like, sort of process what is happening here. She can't make that grief and trauma go away from her friend being brutalized. But Jesus has risen. And so she needs to figure this out. And there's no hurrying grief, no matter what. Our theme throughout this season of Lent has been dwelling in dissonance. And this might be the biggest dissonance of all. This seeing the empty tomb, but not seeing Jesus yet. Still feeling the heaviness and loss of grief, but understanding that something significant has happened. To dwell right in the middle of that. And Mary stays in that feeling and in that place. And because she does, she experiences Christ. She's able to experience the beauty of transformation and of meeting the risen Christ face to face. The author Angela Gurrell is the author of a book called The Gravity of Joy. And I haven't read it, probably will never read it, but I heard her on a podcast. And what I appreciated about her writing was the way she writes about joy. She's a professor at Baylor's Seminary. But she spent several years at Yale doing some research and studying joy, which is a thing you can study, apparently. And in the midst of this serious pursuit of joy, an academic pursuit of joy, she experienced a number of traumatic things happening to her in her, like, personally. Several deaths in her family, one of them by suicide, her father to opioid use. And during these traumatic things, she's studying joy. And she remembers during that time her colleague at Yale, Willie James Jennings, who is a theologian and whose work I know from his study of Acts. He talks about how, she said, he talks about the way pain can be productive without glorifying or justifying suffering. Like, you don't have to explain away the horrible thing or say that God meant it to happen or whatever to make meaning out of the pain that you are experiencing and feeling. Some Christians are fond of saying things like, when you're experiencing grief or pain or suffering, you will hear some Christians say things like, it's all part of God's plan, or God doesn't give us more than we can handle. But I hope you will excuse me if I say that is complete BS, because we often experience more than we can handle. All the time. And God's dream for us is not that we suffer or that we feel pain. In those times, God is coming alongside us and deeply, deeply feeling it with us. God shows up and tenderly calls our name. She is deep within her grief and her confusion, and she comes out of the tomb, and Mary hears her name. Jesus appears to Mary and he calls her name. And John probably meant this. I don't know if he meant it or not, but he probably did when he wrote, when he's calling back that reminder, that story we heard way back near the beginning of John of the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd who knows each of his sheep and calls them by name, and they know his voice and they go to him. John is recalling to us the kind of gentle teacher that Jesus is, the kind of gentle friend that calls each of his disciples home. Something else that Willie James Jennings has written and spoken about joy is that it is an act of resistance. He says this: I look at joy as an act of resistance against despair and its forces. Joy, in that regard, is a work that can become a state, that can become a way of life. It resists. The way of despair wants to drive us toward death. Wants to make death the final word. And by death, he doesn't just mean the end of life, but like the all death's forces of war and violence and the ways that life is presented as not worth living. That's what, how he would sums it up. That kind of joy is not just like putting on a happy face. Like that's not joy. It's not a pretense. It's not. You know, like that's what might be called toxic positivity, this like need, this drive to at least act happy or cheerful in all cases. But it is, as Angela Gurrell says, getting up expecting that God will meet me. Getting up expecting that God will meet me and that I will be able to recognize beauty. There's an Ignatian practice called the examine, in which you think about the consolation and the desolation. The desolation in life being the moments where you feel distant from God, the moments where you can't hear God calling your name, and a consolation being those times when you can deeply feel God's presence, even in the midst of great sorrow. And that, I think, is what Jennings and Gurrell are talking about, the consolation of even through sorrows, understanding and knowing God calling your name. God being present beside you, just as Jesus was present with Mary. And even after Mary finally realizes that Jesus is Jesus and he's not the gardener, although it is amusing to me, I have to say, to imagine Jesus, you know, like wearing overalls and like a funny hat, maybe like trowel in his pocket. Jesus reminds Mary that she can't hold on. Because I can imagine this is a dear friend and teacher of hers. I can imagine as soon as she saw, oh, it's Jesus, like grabbing on, wanting to stay with him. Jesus reminds her she can't keep him there. She can't cling to him. She needs to let go because, yes, he is alive, but their relationship will never be the same. Because of resurrection, she needs to release. Because of resurrection, releasing him is the only way that she can receive his spirit to be with her always. And that's another complex thing that she and her fellow disciples will need to keep figuring out. Having experienced this whole timeline of trauma and death and emptiness and resurrection and the joy of Christ's presence and then release. Of seeing Jesus with her and hearing him call her name, and then knowing she needs to let go. Because together she and her fellow disciples will need to figure out how do we do this? How do we follow without a leader? How do we continue to be disciples and like work at that together? We are each other's leaders. Easter is as messy and complicated as the rest of life, frankly. And maybe more so because all of those emotions are so much more heightened. It's as complicated as the rest of faithfulness and discipleship. But ultimately, Easter is about resurrection. It is about joy. And it's okay for joy to be a little complicated. But it is about a joy that does not need to deny that despair or fear or sadness are a part of this world, a part of our lives, but that will push back against the domination of death, that will push back against the forces of violence and war. that will, in fact, vigorously resist those forces. My friends, Christ is risen. Christ is
Righteous, risen
risen.
indeed.
And in all of that emotion, we may proclaim that with assurance and with joy. And may we continue to meet the risen Jesus who calls our name. Each and every one of us calls our name, comes to meet us, and then may we continue to follow Jesus in the newness of life. Amen.